All right, we'll get started this morning. Our main passage is going to be Acts 4, 13. And so, Preston, if you'll read that the first time, Acts 4, 13. Brian DeBlois, if you'll get Acts 4, 13 the second time. Matthew 7, 28 through 29. Brian Mitchell, if you'll get that for us. 2 Timothy 2, 2. Lem, if you'll read that for us. And then Sam, if you'll get Acts 4:13 the third time. That'll be the third time. Okay, last week I mentioned that I like to revisit concert ministry from time to time. It's been probably almost a couple years since I talked about different arenas of concert ministry. Last week we looked at concert converts and contending for fruitfulness in our concert ministry. Today I want to look at concert preaching. Concert preaching and the mechanics that Pastor Greg taught me and the mechanics that I have taught since I've learned it. But sharing a story years ago, this would have been probably in 2015, an evangelist in another part of our fellowship, we were at a gathering after a conference, and he asked me a question. He asked, how does Pastor Greg teach you to preach in the concert? And so I answered him with exactly what I'm going to teach you this morning, the four mechanics of the altar call structure, the three preaching volumes. And when I finished answering that, he smiled and he said, you are the fourth Pastor Greg disciple to answer me the exact same way. And that's because Pastor Greg taught us very specifically, number one, how to deliver a clear altar call, but then secondly, how to get results. And so I want to look at the mechanics today. We'll look maybe at the man, the spiritual side of it in another lesson. But in the passage we're going to look at this morning, the way that Peter and John preached, it was evident that they learned their preaching from Jesus. And I want to use that idea because the way that we preach here in Prescott, the way our disciples preach, the way I'm going to teach you is what I've learned from my pastor. People can look at that and say, they've been with Pastor Jesse or they've been with Pastor Greg. So I want to look at that. Acts 4:13. Let's read that the first time.
When they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized they were unschooled, ordinary men, they looked astonished and took note that these men had been with Jesus.
Okay, concert preaching. Let's lay a foundation. Let's talk firstly about impartation. What we see in our passage, the fact that these men hearing, these people that are hearing Peter and John preach, this is the results of impartation. They weren't just parroting Jesus. They weren't just saying things the way he said it, or, you know, this idea of finding the right accent or inflections. No, it was the results of an impartation. Let's read the second time, Acts 4:13.
The leaders saw that Peter and John were not afraid to speak, and they understood that these men had no special training or education. So they were amazed, and they realized that Peter and John had been with Jesus.
Okay, they realized. This is a recognition. They have been with Jesus. They preach like Jesus preached. They teach like Jesus taught. They're approaching ministry the same way we saw Jesus do for 3 years. In other words, it was evident in their ministry, it was evident in their preaching that they were disciples of Jesus. And that is impartation. Again, we're not talking about just trying to sound like. Impartation involves the spirit of your pastor. Impartation involves loving what he loves, being passionate about what he's passionate about. And there is an element that you do sound like your pastor, just like traits you can see maybe in your own life. The older I get, the more I sound like my dad. It's one of those things. That's traits. That's in there. There's things I see my kids do. Hey, that's me. That's, I'm in there, right? That's traits. That is true, but we're talking about something deeper. It's an impartation. So how they ministered is how Jesus ministered. The way in which they're approaching all of this is the same way they watched Jesus do it for 3 years. It's the same way they approached it in their lives. Let's read Matthew 7, 28 through 29.
When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as the teachers of the law.
Okay, here talking about Jesus, the people were amazed at his teaching. And I liked Brian's translation. It says there in Acts 4, 13 as well, and they were amazed. There's something different about the way these men approach ministry. There's something different than the regular preaching or teaching of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. Peter and John took on that same spirit of Jesus. Peter and John took on that same perspective, that same authority. They recognized we're heralds of the King. We declare the King's message, and they applied those principles to their ministry. So this is true today, right? This is the great thing about discipleship, and this is the great thing about what Pastor Greg teaches and how he teaches. And what I am teaching is that discipleship can be transmitted and discipleship can be replicated. Those are two important things. I cast the same way my pastor casted. And it's possible you can catch what I caught from my pastor. You can have the same spirit. You can have the same approach, right? I've learned from Pastor Greg, not only in the last 6 years, more learning and insight and instruction and correction and all the different things involved in discipleship, but years ago, before I ever moved to Prescott, or back to Prescott, is years ago in my discipleship, that's where I learned the most when it came to what I'm talking about this morning. And that is the chain of discipleship. It is, it can be transmitted, it can be replicated, and that's biblical. 2 Timothy 2:2.
And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also.
Okay, here is Paul talking to Timothy, his son in the faith, as Paul says it in another passage. And what is he instructing his spiritual son? What is he instructing his disciple? He says, everything you've heard from me, everything I've taught, everything I've instructed, everything I've put into your life, entrust those same principles, convictions, entrust that same spirit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. What I have received, you can receive. You can get the same impartation. You can get the same deposit. Because what I have received, and this is the incredible thing of Pastor Greg's teaching, what I have received can be replicated, and it has been over the years. Like I said, this is how I learned. What I'm going to teach you this morning, it is what I learned, and it is what I have taught for the last 14 years of ministry. It's what I've taught disciples in Santa Fe. It's what I've taught other pastors in the area that I was in connection with. It's what I taught my disciples in Rochester. And it's what I taught other pastors in the area. But I want you to understand something. It has to be caught. Pastor Greg, when he's home, he faithfully casts vision, faithfully answers questions, faithfully gives insight, faithfully is casting vision, casting impartation, but you have to catch it for yourself. I can't do that for you. I can throw all day, but unless you're receiving it, it has to be caught. Secondly, it has to be sought. You have to seek this out, right? Sometimes you get guys, they think they have a better idea. They're going to do it their own way, or they're going to, you know what? Pastor Greg was just in Launceston, Tasmania, the church he pioneered, some 40, I think they hit their 40 year, if not it's the 45, but 40 to 45 years ago, the effectiveness, the discipleship, the results that he has seen over the course of his ministry, I think 40 plus years of ministry is worth following. That's my opinion. That's my heart. I want to follow what's been tested, what's been true. I want to follow what is still lasting some 40 years later. What is still being instilled and planted and working. So I will cast, but you have to catch. Like my pastor, I will make it available, but you have to seek it. But in that, I want you to recognize it is attainable. Just like Paul told Timothy, take everything you've learned from me, entrust it with faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And so let's look secondly then at concert preaching. So we've talked about impartation. What I'm talking and teaching this morning, it's more than just information. I'm trying to deposit a spirit. I'm trying to deposit a perspective. I'm trying to deposit an attitude at work in you when it comes to concert preaching. So, the mechanics of concert preaching, again, are what I've learned from Pastor Greg and what I teach. So, the layout of an altar call. What is the structure of an effective altar call? It can be summed up in four pieces. Okay? And this is what I teach every altar call preacher before they preach at 180. I teach them these four things. Number one, you need an illustration. And we're going to get into detail on these. So number one, illustration. Number two, application. Number three, declaration. Number four, appeal. That is the structure of an effective altar call. That is the structure that's going to help your message be clear. And you know what? Those are the foundations of preaching. You know, I never preached a formal service as a disciple until my first service in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But I had preached tons of altar calls. But I had preached neighborhood healing crusades. But I had preached, right, just these other things in my discipleship. But a church service, not until I got sent out. But these are the foundations. So let's think firstly about illustration, that first piece of the structure. An illustration is a story that illustrates an aspect of the gospel. It's a story that gives you an idea of something that leads to salvation. It illustrates a perspective. So that could be forgiveness. That could be mercy. That could be grace. That could be consequences. Last night's altar call was very clear. It was about substitution. The Father saved his Son in place of his own life. He substituted. You will live. And tragically in the story, he died, but that illustrated substitution. So when you give an illustration, you deliver the essence of that story. You don't have to say, on August 3rd, 2019, there was a man by the name of, full name, you know, John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, right? It's whatever it is, you get all into the details. And no, you give the essence. You give the essence. There's a story I read about a man that, right? You boil it down, but you gotta make sure the illustration you are extracting with clarity what you're talking about. And this was forgiveness. This is a story about mercy. This is a story about grace. This is a story of consequences, etc., etc., that has to be clear. If that is clear, then your application will be clear. That's the second part of a altar call structure, is the application. So you share your illustration, your story, and then the application, how does this story apply to you and I? And no doubt, if you've sat through any 180, you have heard an altar call preacher say, when I read this, it reminded me of you and I. And I remember before I learned this, I used to think, why do they all say that? Because that's what pastor taught them, right? And in that, it's a transition statement. When I read this story, it reminded me of you and I. What is the bridge now? What is the bridge that places the listener or the audience in your story? Right? Is last night, I'm just using it because it's fresh. We saw it. We heard it. So here, the son went to go get help. Tragically, that was 2 miles away, and he tragically died. But he gave his life in place of his son. You know, when I read that, I thought about you and I. And someone died in our place, right? That's the application. Now that takes this story and it brings it to reality of where people are at. And that gives you your theme. You're going to now flow in that idea, just using last night as a reference, of substitution. You're going to keep that the main theme of your altar call. You're not going to switch to something else. You're not going to now bring in a whole other idea. Here we are talking about substitution. Now I want to talk about grace or substitution. Now I want to talk about the consequence or whatever that is. You stay in the vein of that theme. That is application. So that's a transition statement. As I read this, I thought about you and I and our need. Or as I read this, I thought about you and I. Someone already died in your place. Now comes declaration. The declaration piece is now where you begin to, you have your theme, you've given the illustration, you've given the application. Now we need to declare the gospel. Now we need to bring to the forefront sin and the consequences of sin. We need to bring in the hope of Jesus Christ and Christ incarnate, Christ crucified, Christ resurrected. You're giving that bold declaration, and it's the clarity of the gospel. Again, just referencing the altar call last night is in that declaration, right? Transition. As I read this, I thought about you and I. Someone died in your place. That is Jesus Christ. And why did he need to die in our place? What is the purpose of that? It's because we are bound by sin. Our desperate need is not a pond on a frozen lake or, you know, a frozen lake. It's sin. Sin is what destroys, right? You're bringing in the declaration, the gospel. And who died? Jesus died. Paid in full for your sin, my sin, the sins of the world. Christ crucified, Christ resurrected, that he rose from the dead. That's why he has power to save you from your sin. To save you from your desperate need, as he died in our place, but he rose from the dead. He lives so you can live, right? You're making the gospel clear, but it's again in line to your illustration and application. You can always go back and reference it, and that'll keep you linear. That'll keep your gospel clear. Finally, then, is the appeal. This is the fourth piece of a altar call structure. In the appeal is now where you bring it to heads bowed and eyes closed. This is now your appeal for salvation. Your appeal for people to respond. Your appeal for people to get saved. How many here you want to pray? How many here you recognize your need? Your need for a savior. You're drowning in your sin. You're drowning in the consequences of your sin. It's overwhelming. Right? All you're applying your story in that appeal. How many here you want to pray? You want to invite Jesus Christ into your life? I want you to raise your hand. How many? Quickly, right now, you'd raise your hand. God's dealing with you. Have some fillers in your appeal. I remember my first altar call. In my head, man, the masses came to repentance. In my head, it was amazing. Floods of people were flocking to the altar. That didn't happen in real life. And I froze. How many here, you want to give your life to Jesus? You raise your hand. And I'm expecting, I see that hand. I see that hand. How many others? I see that hand. There wasn't. And I choked. Okay, well, let's all stand. Forgot about backsliders, just totally choked, and let's all stand. People did come forward and get saved, but again, you need some fillers, because sometimes you got to give people the courage in that appeal. The Holy Ghost has been faithful to convict of sin. The Holy Ghost is moving through the scriptures that you have applied to your altar call. The Holy Spirit is moving through the gospel declaration of Jesus Christ, the name of Jesus, the blood of Jesus, the power of Jesus. Holy Spirit's moving through that, but you've got to give people the courage. You know what's going to happen with the hands raised. You know what's going to happen when you call them forward. The listener doesn't, the first-time visitor doesn't. We all know what's going to happen. The visitor doesn't. So what are you doing in the appeal? You're giving them the courage. And that's what you want to say. How many here? Instead of who here? Right? If I ask the question, who here? And it's something that maybe you don't want to admit to, or maybe something you don't want to acknowledge. No one's going to raise their hand with a who here. But how many here? How many here? You're not born again. I wonder how many right now. What's that telling you? What that is telling the listener, what that is telling the audience, is there's probably others that are feeling what I'm feeling. There's probably others that are needing what I'm needing. And you've got to pull for the one. There's something supernatural about getting one hand raised that it unlocks other hands. When we had the youth rally, back in April or March, whichever it was, but when Ael was preaching, we have an audience of 600. There's hundreds of people in that place. There's tens and tens of visitors that are there, local families. He's pulling the altar call, and it's like, this is unacceptable. No one's raising their hand. No one is lifting up. Those moments are very crucial where you are contending, where you are, how many here right now? God's tugging on your heart. God's dealing with you. Christians began to pray. Cast began to pray. Those involved began to pray. And when we got one, then others began to respond. Sometimes you got to break through that. So in your appeal, have some things in your toolbox. Have some statements in your toolbox. Have some sayings in your toolbox that you can apply. So that is the structure. No doubt many of you have heard this numbers of times, but there's others. You're hearing it the first time. That is a structure that will help your message be clear. Secondly, then, in the delivery of an altar call is preaching volumes. Okay, since I've started ministering this morning, I have been declaring to you. Yes, we're in a teaching setting, but I have to elevate my voice. So when I'm preaching, I raise above my conversation level. This is my conversation level. If I'm just talking one-on-one, this is where I'm at. This is not the level which I preach it. Okay, that's not where we preach. We're not sharers of the gospel. We're heralds. We declare the king's message. So there are three preaching volumes. There's illustration level, declaration level, and appeal level. Altar calls are always above the conversation level, right? Again, because we boldly declare. Let's read the third time, Acts 4:13.
Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men, they marveled and they realized that they had been with Jesus.
Okay, when they saw the boldness, they're boldly declaring Christ. They're boldly preaching. that gospel, and that is what got the attention of the listeners, a boldness. So when you are preaching, we're never living in conversation level. Illustration level, this is my conversation level right here. Illustration level is above conversation, okay? We don't go, I was reading a story the other day, and in that story, it was talking about a father and a son that were out on a snowmobile. Again, I'm just using last night's because it's fresh, okay? No, we don't do that. We're at illustration level. If I could have your attention for the next few minutes, I was reading a story about a father and son. They were snowmobiling, right? You're above. So that's number one, is illustration level. It's above conversation level in order to demand the attention of the listener. Very important. Then, after illustration level, is declaration level. Declaration level is above your illustration. Why? Because you're boldly declaring the gospel. So, right, you get to that declaration. So why, when I read this story, it reminded me of you and I and our need for saving. Tonight, your need is not a frozen pond. Your need is rooted in your sin. You need a transformation. You're bound by drugs. You're bound by alcohol, right? It's higher. And what you're doing is, it's a bold declaration. You're also demanding the attention of the audience, but you're also in that declaring Christ. Again, a herald of the king, a herald declares the king's message. So it's, I have a message from God. This is your eternity. This is about salvation. So it's higher. That is declaration level. Finally, then, is appeal. So we have conversation, illustration, declaration. Then appeal is at your illustration level. We never come down into the conversation zone. So heads bowed, eyes closed. I wonder how many here right now, you need a miracle in your life. You need the forgiveness of sin. You need to apply the substitution that Jesus paid in full. You need to apply it to your life. And I wonder right now, how many would there be? You'd raise your hand. Say, that's me tonight. I need forgiveness of sin. I want to leave changed and different. I want to be born again. Then I want to help you to pray, right? You're never at conversation level. You know, based on everything I said tonight, I wonder how many would there be you want to give Jesus your life? Would you raise your hand? See, that feels different. There's a different authority behind it. So you got to elevate, and this does take some practice. Believe it or not, I was a pretty quiet person before I became a pastor. Volume, I've learned it, I've developed it. I preach from my diaphragm. I can preach and extend my voice, not because I'm not preaching from my throat. When you preach from your throat, that's when you get hoarse. That's when you develop, you lose your voice. But you got to learn, pull from deeper so that you can deliver. So, mechanics, structure, illustration, application, declaration, appeal. Preaching volumes, illustration level, declaration level, appeal level. So let's close. Let's talk about preaching results. Now, these mechanics and methods are meant to give you the best possible results. And what are we looking for? We're looking for hands raised. We're looking for people responding for salvation. Again, this is what I have learned years and years and years ago. And it's what's made all the difference in my preaching. Like I said, today, those are the foundations. It prepped me for my future ministry. And it is what I have taught disciples and pastors all over the fellowship. It's ingrained in me. It's at work. It's how I view it. But again, where did I learn this? I learned it from my pastor. It was transferable to me. And because I made it my own, I've been able to transfer it to others. All right. So let's open it up for some questions on concert preaching. Something you want to ask about this topic.
Would you, as a concert director, or if you're going to preach that night, once in a while, if you're at the concert, there seems to be this theme going throughout. And once in a while, not to be critical, but the concert preacher would come and he just seems to come with a message that seems a little bit off topic. Would you, if you knew there was if you had some illustration in your mind, would you pivot at that point?
Yeah.
And try to,
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you want to have a sensitivity. Sometimes a theme naturally arises. Yeah. So that can happen in a concert where there's a flow and it's like God's just pointing it to this specific point. Right? Which is why, if at all possible, you learn it, but you have to stay involved in the concert, right? From beginning to end. So stay involved from the meeting. Sometimes you might see it whoa, those are interesting. What's that song about and that song about? Because it's a theme. There's a video or a drama title. It seems, if you're involved and you're paying attention, you might notice it well in advance. Or just throughout the night, things get highlighted. This song and this theme, and then this person testified, and then that video, and it all seems to be pointing in one direction. Yes, pivot and preach the theme. That's possible. But don't come expecting one, right? In other words, don't come unprepared. Yes. The second time, Steve, that you would go with the theme of the night would be a play. Whenever there's a play and I know if I'm directing and I know who's preaching, I send that preacher the script, review it. This is the theme, I tell them. So the theme is forgiveness and you come out and preach about the consequences of sin. I read a story about a man who had a pet tiger and it ate him. We've just watched an entire production about forgiveness. That would not work, right? Another point where you come and preach something with a theme is our plaza outreaches, our movie outreaches. We've just watched a movie. What is a theme that you can extract? It might not be just one, but pull one and apply that. So those would be times then, too, you go with the night or the flow. Yep, good. Yeah, Danny.
Do you consider when you're appealing for backsliders as a filler per se, or just or you're gonna definitely touch on pulling for backsliders in your altar call?
Yes, yeah, you definitely pull for it, and you can apply your theme. What I often do, and you'll hear sometimes when I'm preaching, just even a regular service, when I make an appeal for salvation, I usually appeal based on my sermon, right? In some way, I try to make that applicable. Then, when I appeal for backsliders, again, I draw from the sermon. Maybe the very thing I ministered on tonight is what pulled you out of church. You went back to because of, fill in the blank, whatever that is. So yeah, in your altar call, you can make it applicable, right? You're calling for sinners. In your altar call theme, it fits. Let's use last night's as a reference. Now, backslider, you're here. You once knew the love of God, but again today, you're drowning in your sin. You went back to old habits, back to old relationships, back to old mindsets, and you're drowning in your sin tonight. Come home. Jesus wants to forgive you. So make it applicable still. And have it somewhat developed is what I would recommend. Yeah, have it prepared rather than a passing. Any backsliders? Nope. Okay, let's move along, right? So really pull for that. Yeah. Good. Yeah, David.
Just a question about the length of it. Two questions. So one is, can you talk about the how long it should be?
Yes.
Like illustration, the application appeal between something outdoors, people seem to have a shorter attention span versus like in a building like.
Yeah, good question. And so number one, this is something I teach new altar call preachers, is 10 minutes from opening illustration to when we stand, right? So that's illustration, application, declaration, appeal, pooling, and then we stand and invite, you know, those people to come and pray. 10 minutes is the aimed time. If you preach shorter, no one's going to protest. My first altar call, I practiced, and it was about eight to nine minutes, somewhere in there, and I was like, okay, that's good. You know, I'm under the 10-minute mark. When I actually delivered, it was like 6 minutes, you know. But again, nobody came up afterward and said, hey, I was hoping for a longer altar call. No, is 10 minutes, though, is that allotted window. Now, outside, yes, you've got to be aware of variables, right? In Prescott Valley right now, especially in our spring outreaches, it's going to be windy, 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 just no matter what we do. We're fighting the wind. So if you're out there and you're preaching and the wind is being picked up in the mic, you know, that's just... cut it short. Let's do some one-on-one, right? Do the best you can, right? In any kind of family fun event, you know, you're trying to gather people, you know, and I've seen literally people get frustrated and, hey, I'm trying to, come, everybody, come in, quiet down. You know, no, that's not helping, right? So you got to declare and shorten it, right? I know you labored over your altar call. I get it. I've been there. Sometimes you're just shooting direct, right? In another one would be haunted house. We have hundreds of people outside waiting. So I give men an allotted time. You have 3 minutes to preach Jesus and pray with people. And let's move forward because there's hundreds of people still waiting. So yeah, you're sensitive to that, whatever the event is presenting.
Okay, and then the follow-up question would be, For a concert, is there a minimum amount of time? Because I think you trained us like 8 to 10 minutes was kind of a window.
That's the window, sure.
Is it going to hurt it a bit shorter?
No. Again, like I said, when I first preached my first one, it was very short and nobody protested. So, yeah. And since then, right, I can hear in Prescott now even today preach a 30-minute sermon or a 24-minute sermon. Again, both... God is using because of the preparation, and we'll talk about the man preparing maybe next week. So, but yeah, absolutely if again it could be 3 minutes long, but was the illustration clear? Was the application clear? Right? Short isn't necessarily the enemy, nor does long altar calls produce converts. Right? Because you hit Genesis to Revelation in your altar call. Yeah.
Good. Kyle. Going back to the family fun day or just outdoor events, you said cut it short. So you're saying, I mean, initially, like the introduction, there's not going to be illustration, maybe just to grab their attention and spend more time in the gospel, right? To hit the...
Yeah, you feel it out. You know, every crowd is different. You might start with a story and just as a natural, people gather in, right? I've preached some altar calls at parks. I've preached healing crusades at parks and in neighborhood outreaches, you know, in someone's front yard. I've preached those healing crusade services in 5 minutes. I've preached them in 15 minutes. You got to just go by the crowd. You go by the weather, right? If it's about to start pouring and you're barely finishing up point one, right? You got to have some sensitivity. There's so many variables just to be conscious of. But yes, you might scrap your illustration and go straight to the gospel. Yeah. Good. Yeah, Micah.
So when you're contending using
fillers, like if you're trying to contend for the one person to raise your hand, when do you, what's kind of the balance of continuing to press in, especially if you feel resistance or you feel like there's somebody is just wrestling, but then it just doesn't respond? Like how do you, when do you kind of just, okay, move on?
Typically, and hopefully you have the awareness when you start feeling awkward. Right. Some guys, and I say hopefully you have the awareness, because some guys just don't, right? They're there and it's like anybody, and then it sounds like a desperate plea, like please will you raise your hand, you know. So with that is you want to have some fillers, you want to have it kind of scripted, right? And that was something I had to learn and develop, you know, not only after my first altar call. But I would say by my third altar call, I was still struggling in that. And then you got to recognize, too, sometimes it feels longer on the stage than it does in real life. To you, it felt like an eternity, that pause, you know. But really, it was a millisecond, right? It just, time is different on that platform. So that's why it's good to practice. That's why it's good to listen to yourself. We have that capacity, right? And then yes, have an arsenal of fillers that help you. Again, it's all about giving the listener the courage to respond, right? And what you do in that time, especially Micah, sometimes it is a lack of, I don't want to say education, a lack of clarity. It's a lack of clarity. So you're saying you need to get saved, raise your hand. How many? Quickly, raise your hand. Just raise your hand right now. Raise it up. Lift up your hand. God's dealing with you. Raise your hand. For what? Right? There's no clarity. So you're here tonight. You want to give your life to Jesus Christ. Then I want you to raise your hand. By raising your hand, you're saying, yes, I want to pray. I want to give my life to Jesus. By raising your hand, you're saying, I need this tonight. I need to be forgiven. I'm tired of my sin. By raising your hand, I'm going to pray with you. You lift your hand. That lets me know you want to pray right now. Lift it high where I can see it. I want to give my life to Jesus. You're telling them why, right? So sometimes it could be an issue of clarity also. Yep. Good. Yeah, Sam.
You said loving what your pastor loves comes out in your preaching. Is that just... How is that developed? Is that time spent with them praying for it?
Yeah. Yeah, the reason I shook my head no is because time spent with my pastor, right, being discipled here in Prescott, happened here in Serious Men. Time spent with my pastor happened at Q&A in the morning. I can count with clarity 4 times that I sat with my pastor outside of this table, Serious Men, Q&A, or in any kind of constructive criticism at 180. So outside of that, one time we wrote a sermon with him at a Starbucks. One time my brother and I went to dinner with him. One time he invited my brother and I to his house for coffee. And I'm struggling to remember the 4th right now. So very, very little time. Where it came from the most was in these settings. So he's casting, right? And that's what we do. Every Serious Man, every Q&A, we're actually casting impartation, where that's the impartation of spirit, the impartation of valuing what we value, loving what we love, right? Every answer is actually flowing from the reservoir of our hearts, our experience, and our relationship with God. And it's being cast. Whether you, how you apply it in your life is up to you, right? So that's how that happens. Number one is through the discipleship avenue. Number two, yes, pray for it. Ask God for it. I began to pray in my discipleship for the spirit of my pastors, etc. But when I got on the field, there was 2 prayers that really changed, I believe, my ministry. Number one was being in an older church, taking over Santa Fe, which was 33 years old at the time, I remember being frustrated a little bit early on, and I remember thinking to myself, man, they need a Pastor Greg. That's what they need here. But I knew, like, that's never going to happen. It was one of those internal conversations. So then I thought, If they needed Pastor Greg, I carry his spirit. That's why I've been sent. So I began to pray, God help me to articulate sentences and convey thoughts like Pastor Greg. That was a prayer that I began to really pray for. Secondly, is I remember being very discouraged, and Pastor Greg, I had called him, he counseled and prayed over me, and I felt, okay, man, I can do this. But I remember noting, God, I've only been at this a year and a half. If I'm supposed to do this the rest of my life, then I need the resilience and steadfastness of Pastor Wayman Mitchell. And that's what I began to pray for. Those two prayers were life-changing. Here now, being in Prescott, numbers of my prayers, number one, God, give me the instincts of my pastor, that I will instinctively respond to things as he would. Number two, help me to think like my pastor. Because again, there's a lot of times where I got to make quick decisions. Pastor's not here, or, you know, with time difference, sometimes I need that. So God, help me to think like him. Give me the instincts. And so, yes, you contend for it. Yep. And then thirdly is, you hear me quote him all the time. Why? Because I write it down. I'm seeking that wisdom. Yep. Good. Steve.
When you say you speak from your diaphragm, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not like in music.
No, absolutely, yeah.
It's easy to
demonstrate, right? So your diaphragm's a muscle, right? Helps you breathe, etc. So if you, just below where your ribs kind of split, just below there, if you're talking and you push on it, that's talking from your diaphragm. You got to pull from down low, right? So when you're doing that, it's coming from down here. You're using, almost like pushing and projecting your voice versus talking from up here, right? Have you ever, you know, maybe preached a sermon or been at a game, right? And you're cheering on your team, and then you get in the car and you're like, wow, that was a great game, you know? It's because you were cheering them from your throat. It's not just that you were had an elevated volume. You were cheering. You were using from the voice box rather than from the diaphragm. So that's a way you can practice, is by pushing on your diaphragm. And you hear that push? That's what that is. Yep. Good.
Pastor, any recommendations about the thought of illustration? What website maybe you can find illustrations?
Yeah. Number one, read the news. Majority of my illustrations came out of news. And some news, you know, you click on their menu, they'll have like weird stories or, you know, whatever. So that's one thing. You can Google, right? Or you can chat. Tell me a real story or a true story. Because chat will, or any other AI platform, will give you whatever story you want. But it has to be real. So then you find a good story, now send me links of this article. So then, boom, a news link or whatever, and it helps you recognize a true story. So maybe books. There was an app that I used a lot for like offering illustrations, or even later I taught guys they could use, I think it's called Newser, if I remember right. Newser takes articles and puts it down in like two paragraphs. So already it's weeding out a lot of unnecessary information. Then you could take those 2 to 3 paragraphs and boil it down even more. I just had a guy who's not even an altar call preacher. He sent me an article, and many of you probably heard about this NASCAR driver that passed away because of pneumonia, right? And then the pneumonia turned sepsis, and he died. But you read the article, he had been dealing with all kinds of signs and symptoms. He's racing, pulling into a pit stop, putting in steroids so he can keep going. In other words, ignoring the problem. And he said, I sent you that because I thought, that's like an illustration for an altar call. Ignoring the signs and still trying to function and operate. And I said, exactly. So anywhere and everywhere you can draw inspiration. Sometimes life experience. I remember preaching an altar call when I had worked in the ER. And just a story of a man who went into an ER, had cancer, and came in for for pain. He wanted some pain management. And the triage nurse interviewing him, hearing that he had cancer actually all throughout his body. He was stage four. He's on the last bit of life. She said, all things considered, you look really good. She's trying to encourage. And he said, while I look okay on the outside, the cancer on the inside is destroying me. Right? That's an illustration. And so tonight, your need is not, your issue may not be cancer, but we all have sin. So it could be life experience, et cetera, et cetera. So anything and everything you're looking. And it would be wise to think about altar calls often, right? Whether you're preaching them or not, you know, just developing it, what I'm talking about. I started developing altar calls before I ever became an altar call preacher. And I was continuously writing altar calls, even when it wasn't, you know, that I was preaching Saturday and I'm working on it Friday. No, I was working on altar calls all the time. When I came to my turn to preach, I had to pick an altar call to preach from because I had a folder full of them. And so that's because I dedicated myself to it. So you can do that now. And then I also had a lot of anxiety, so I would write down movie outreaches, and I'd listen to the other altar call preachers or concert directors and the themes they pulled, because we showed the same movies, right? So I'd listen and be like, oh, I like that theme. I'd write it down, and then I had a bunch of altar calls for movie outreaches. So that helped me. Yeah. I was thinking ahead. Yeah.
When you're pulling for a response, an altar call, you're using fillers, you're trying to get that, especially that first initial hand to be raised. Can it be helpful to say, I see that hand, even when there's no hands?
No, I would not recommend that. Yeah, yeah, because then no one raises their hand. Really, right? You go, okay, that one that raised their hand owes me. So, yeah, that I would not recommend. So, no. But you do, because it's a battle. That's the point, Daniel. It's a fight. Right? That's a fight in dominion. That's a fight in establishing that. And so again, my first three altar calls, people got saved, but they didn't raise their hands. And that frustrated me. And I talked to my pastor. People are getting saved. They're responding once we stand. I'm not getting breakthrough. I had to get a breakthrough in it. So absolutely. But once I got a breakthrough, every single time I had hands raised because I got a breakthrough in it and I continued to contend for that. It's a fight. Yeah, good. Good question. Yeah, Brian.
Right after, like, say you have some hands raised and you're telling them to stand and come to the altar and you see so many different versions of, like, calling them to the altar.
Yeah, right? Good question.
What is, like, the best way? Because in my head, I'm thinking, I've seen people say, like, come here, like, commanding
those. Yeah.
And then in my head, I would feel like asking them to come.
Sure. Yeah, and there is a way to do it, and that's a very good question. I'm glad you bring it up, Brian, is you want to do it in steps. So I see that hand. I see that hand. How many others? I see that hand. Okay. Heads are bowed. Eyes are closed. Just those that raise their hand, I want you to look up at me. Raise your hand and look up at me again. What you're doing is they've already done this motion. So now raise your hand. That's so you remember where they're at. And then look up at me. Yes. And then you make eye contact. Did you mean that? Yes. Nod your head. Yes. You meant that. You meant that. Yes. You meant that over here. Yes. Okay. Now I want you to just stand where you're at. I'm not here to embarrass you. We're going to pray with you. But if you just stand where you're at, right? You're asking them to do it, kind of like what you're saying. They stand, maybe one stands, the other two don't. But now, by having them raise their hand again and look up at you, your altar call workers can help give them the courage. So let's say you get one to stand. You raised your hand. You want to get saved. Stand with me right now. Stand. And you encourage them. They get that. Now I want you to come forward. We're going to have someone pray with you here at the front of at the altar. Come forward. I want to invite you to come right now. Someone's going to pray with you. You do it in steps and stages. Because again, we know what's going to happen. Why do some guys say, you raise your hand, look at me, you meant that? I want you to come here. Come right now. You know, and because we know what's going to happen. They don't. So by doing it in steps, you're giving them courage. Each step gets them closer to the altar, right? Lift up your hand again. Look up at me. Nod your head. Stand where you're at. Come forward. And that'll really help you get those results. But those are also, back to Daniel's question, those are also dominion issues. Again, I remember getting a breakthrough, right? So the first time we held the Super Fairy Tale play in New York, pulled the altar call. I mean, we had 80 visitors there. We had like 20 hands raised. I said, how many here? You raise your hand. You look up at me. You meant that. You meant that. Yes, 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 yes. Oh, it's incredible. Now I want you to stand. I want you to come forward. That's what I said. Now I want you to come forward so we can pray for you. Come forward. Right now, I just want to pray with you a sinner's prayer. You lifted your hand. Then it was like, nope, not going to do it, right? Because going from hands raised to just come here was not going to happen. And it was something, it was like the air got sucked out of the room. I wound up doing a mass prayer, and it was frustrating. So Pastor Tim, we were having him for revival. We did it on a Friday and Saturday night that first time. I had him pull the altar call the second night, but I told him what happened. So we prayed and contended, but then he did exactly what I'm telling you. Look up at me, nod your head, stand where you're at, come forward. And that second night, we probably had 20 to 30 saved that came forward. But again, you fight it through. Yeah, good. Very good question. All right. Good stuff, guys. We'll stop right there.